Welcome to the Gals Guide podcast. Join us on an adventure to get to know famous and infamous women from around the world. Each of our presenters has a pick. Is she ancient history? Is she breaking news? Is she safe for work? Well, that's up to each presenter. All we know is that...
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Welcome back. I'm Katie, and I'm joined by Riwu, Bonnie, and Lori sharing our Irish gal pick. Bonnie already talked about Lillian Bland, but before we dive back in, I want to get to know something random about our gal pals. I would like to know, because you know I'm all about being a foodie.
Yes.
I'd like to know, what is your favorite Irish food?
Mine's bangers and mash. Mm. I absolutely love bangers and mash. With more Guinness sauce on it, the better. It's one of my go-to favorite things.
You call the gravy Guinness sauce?
It is. It has alcohol in it. So okay. That's why
I've just never heard it referred to as Guinness sauce.
Guinness sauce. Well, because it'll be like the gravy also, you know, they'll say it in a very fancy way, which go with. So it's Guinness sauce then.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that Guinness or Harp is poured in any Irish dish you prepare, at least in my kitchen.
Exactly. So yeah.
I'll mean, if you're Guinness doing it right. Sauce.
Yeah, exactly. If they could bottle that would be great. I know I have lots more, but that is like, I go to an Irish restaurant and that is like, okay, first of all, where's the bangers and mash? And then we'll go from there.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's fair. How about you, Lori?
Well, I'm pretty pedestrian. I do like the corned beef a whole lot.
Yes. Ooh. Delicious.
Especially in a Reuben sandwich. And I don't know how Irish that is, but you always see them at the Irish restaurants. So
yeah, there you go. Yes.
Oh, we'll take it.
Beautiful.
Irish. We used to go... Out where Trey used to live, there was an Irish pub. I'm sure it's like an Americanized Irish pub. Or like, I'm pretty sure it's a chain. But we would like to go there. And I like to get, there was a pear cider.
Oh.
That was really good.
Yeah.
I think I probably had whatever the equivalent of like chicken nuggets was there. I think I got some kind of like a skillet thing with like potatoes and like sausage and veggies. Like gotcha. A scramble thing. Like, I feel like I got something like that.
Nice. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
Katie, what are
I
you
know.
Feeling?
I'm a sucker for fish and chips, and I don't know if that's Irish, but I'm going to go there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a staple diet. I mean, it's quality fish and chips. Yes.
And I would say probably the dish I like that people enjoy eating the most, but I'm just not a huge person, is Guinness stew.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I feel like it has to be mentioned.
Right, yeah.
Some nice
Shepherd's
Guinness
pie.
Stew with some potato and carrot and I do a mean lentil shepherd's pie too.
Oh, there you go. Mm. I'm not a big fan of stews and like a whole bunch of stuff in things. Yeah. And but
well,
I know
I
that it's very tasty and I always taste other people's. Yeah. I'm like, let me just try a little bite. Like, yes, that's good. Mm-hmm. Done it. Yay.
Jenna's dad actually proposed to me after I made him Guinness stew. So
must be pretty
damn
good,
right? Oh,
it's gotta be pretty good then. Yes, exactly. I mean, I think I've almost proposed to you after you make my birthday cake.
Wow. It's natural.
It is. It's
Don't
just,
worry.
It's one of your superpowers.
Well, speaking of having superpowers,
yes?
I have a super amazing woman to introduce to all of you.
Yay!
A total revolutionary from the 60s civil rights movement in Ireland. I'm going to be talking about Bernadette Devlin McAlskey.
Ooh.
Hopefully I got her last name right, because I think I just kept putting Bernadette Devlin because that was so fun to me. But she did eventually get married.
Gotcha.
You know how we rock at Gals Guide. We're just going to go
love
Bernadette.
The first names.
Bernadette.
Yes, exactly.
So Bernadette was born in Northern Ireland in Derry.
Dairy gal.
A dairy gal, yes indeed. She was part of a Catholic family with 7 children. Mom was at home with the children, and dad, I can't remember what his profession was, but I know that because he was Catholic in that Northern Ireland, predominantly Protestant-ruled space, he couldn't get work there.
Oh, gotcha.
So he was often in England working for the family, and her mother was raising the children alone.
Gotcha.
However, she did have a close relationship with her father, and she credits him with teaching her about Ireland's history.
Oh.
Yes.
Nice.
However, he also passed away, I think, when she was about 9 years old.
Oh.
So she didn't have long with her father. And then after that, it was just mom with all of her siblings, and they ended up being on welfare through most of her youth and very impoverished.
Gotcha. On the dole.
Yes, absolutely. Which had a big influence on whose rights she decided to fight for once she became kind of awakened to all the situations in Northern Ireland. So it was when Bernadette went away to college that she became more of an activist. By 1968, she was considered the chain-smoking, plain-speaking wharf who became known as Ireland's Joan of Arc.
Nice.
I mean, it almost echoes Bonnie's gal as well, so I'm taking this. Okay, I like it. Yeah.
So it was during that college years, that she started joining protests and marches and became very politically aware of what was going on. However, during this time, she also was rushing back between, I think she was like at Queen's University in Belfast.
Okay, yeah.
And then she would have to also come home every weekend because her mother had passed and she was finishing raising her younger siblings because she was like the third oldest.
That's gotta be tough.
Right? Oof. Right. She definitely had a lot going on, but was very devoted to the cause. I love when she reflected back on these years. She said, "I had a very moral view when I was younger. I thought everybody cared. I think it's part of a Catholic upbringing and the idea of universal solidarity. That was a journey for me. I didn't think the government was bad. I genuinely thought they just didn't know. And if I went to London to tell them, people would say, 'Do you hear that young woman there? We need to do something about that.' But then I realized, the bastards, they do know. And not only do they know, they don't see anything wrong with it."
That feels like so much of my childhood as well. Like, only if somebody would just tell them, it would all be, oh, wait, they know? That's so cute.
Right.
I love that. So heartbreaking at the same time. Yeah.
Right. So that was very where she was in her mindset and politically. But I think it was dawning on her, like, how much the government was happy with the status quo and what was happening. And so she eventually was elected to Parliament. At that point, she was 22, which made her the youngest person ever appointed to Parliament.
Wow.
Yes. And she filled her spot in Parliament, but she also realized that, I mean, I think what she realized was that true change wasn't going to happen by her being in Parliament. And this was definitely a time, when you think about what was happening in 1968 in the United States, it was a time of civil rights revolution movements. And so their marches got more intense, more violent, more clashes with the police as they happened. Mm-hmm. It was 1970, so she had been 1 or 2 years in Parliament when, I want to find this because I thought it was a really good explanation of what happened, but it was called the Battle of the Bogs.
Yeah, it's a complex one, so yes, by all means, yeah.
Let's see. All right. So, July and August are months for marching in Ulster, and August brought the Battle of Bogside. The Northern Ireland government had banned marches by civil rights group, but allowed loyalist marches, deeming them to be
fair, traditional
and apolitical.
Sure.
On August 12th, 1969, 15,000 Protestant apprentice boys held their annual march. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that just feel Nazi-y already?
A little bit.
Right? Mm-hmm. With the stated goal to show the Catholics who was boss. They marched through the Catholic section of Derry, throwing pennies at the residents, a snide reference to their poverty. So a counter-demonstration sprung up that threw rocks at the apprenticeship boys. Then the clash spread to Belfast in the RUC, which I forget what that stands for, but basically the police, came out.
I used to remember what it stood for.
Right.
Crap, I'm blanking.
I have it in here somewhere.
I'm going to blame a daiquiri. But yes.
Oh, Royal Ulster Constabulary.
Oh, okay.
Constabulary.
Yeah, that thing. Yes.
That, yeah.
The police.
So, the police came. And the police started very quickly using tear gas on the crowds. Bernadette ordered her followers to defend themselves with petroleum bombs. Oh. Adding, throw them hard and straight. After this demonstration, she received a 6-month prison sentence.
I'm not surprised, but yeah. You knew what you were doing in that particular causing a ruckus and petroleum bombs. Yeah, that'll get you in prison.
Right. And so this lasted 3 days, and part of the reason they called it off is that England had summoned their British soldiers to be deployed to Northern Ireland, and they saw that as someone coming in that would protect them from the RUC.
Right.
I think Lee already knows what's coming.
I know, it never works out.
However, they were wrong. On August 14th, 1969, the Army's elite parachute regiment came to Ireland for a brief emergency, and there they stayed for the next 38 years.
Oh, Yeah. So, you know, teeny tiny little emergency. We'll be in and out real quick 38 years later.
Right.
Yeah.
So I kind of skipped over a little bit, and I had bolded words, so I don't want to miss these for you guys. I want you to know that at her first speech in Parliament, she said, she brought her righteous indignation to her maiden speech, and she said, "There is no place in society for us, the ordinary peasants of Northern Ireland, because we are the have-nots, and they are the haves." So she spoke very poetically, with emotion, defending, really seeing this not as a Catholic-Protestant conflict, but a working class, the haves versus the have-nots.
Yeah.
So she actually called herself that she felt like she was more of like a Catholic-Protestant. Okay. She felt, and she also acknowledged other religions. I would say she wasn't extremely tethered to any religion, but more the concept that every life is important and matters.
Equality. Who would have
thought? So that's definitely what she was marching for. So it makes sense that after the Battle of the Bog, she was looking for more support. She was looking for funds, and so she decided to go on a tour of America.
Ooh.
So, unfortunately, it was an ill-fated tour of America.
Oh, no. Oh, I had high hopes.
Right. So, at first, she was embraced by the Irish Americans as a celebrity, a brave freedom fighter from the old country. However, she quickly became disillusioned with this after realizing how removed the Irish Americans were from the civil rights of Black Americans.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, because she saw the Black American struggle in the same vein of what she was trying to accomplish in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And then the Irish Americans quickly pulled away from her, but when she learned that they learned that she was a socialist. Mm-hmm. To them, she was now Fidel Castro in a miniskirt.
Oh!
That was part of it. I liked that line.
Oh, snap.
When she was awarded the key to the city of New York, she sent it up to Harlem as a gift for the Black Panthers.
Oh, the Black Panthers! Sorry, right? I love the Black Panthers.
Bernadette would say the Irish Americans looked like loyalists while she saw herself in black faces. A fan of hers would have to agree, when Muhammad Ali visited Ireland, his sole ambition was to meet Miss Bernadette Devlin.
Oh, no. Nice!
Yes. So during all of this time of touring America, being in Parliament, being in prison for 6 months, was also the year she wrote her autobiography.
Oh, nice.
It's called The Price of My Soul.
Oh.
So I don't know. I didn't look yet if we have it here.
It doesn't ring a bell, but okay. I'll double check. And if we do, I'll put it in the show notes. If not, I'll put it on our wish list.
Okay. Very cool. It would be interesting to read because I have to say... you always hear this from me out there in podcast land, but this illustrated once again how far removed I am from my history lessons of old, because I was really having to try to catch up on the conflicts that were going through Ireland at this time and what she was marching
for. Very complex. So it's something very hard to do even in a month, let alone, you know what I mean, a smaller stretch of time. It takes years to understand and or to be able to somewhat feel like you have some kind of grounding in the many, many years of the battle between. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, but she said she wrote the book to explain the complexity of Northern Ireland and how that kind of produced who she was and what she did.
Nice.
So I think it would probably be a really interesting read.
Yeah, because then you're reading it through one person's life and economy and her surroundings. So that's a good way to see it. Yeah.
All right. So in 1970, she was reelected to the House of Commons. And then on January 30th, 1972, a day that would become known as Bloody Sunday, the Civil Rights Association organized a peaceful march to protest internment. 15,000 unarmed men, women, and children gathered in Derry, surrounded by British paratroopers, the RUC, and armored cars. Bernadette was the key speaker. A minor scuffle between teenage boys and soldiers began, and without provocation, the army fired on the crowd. By the end of the day, 14 defenseless civil rights marchers were dead.
Yeah.
So, I know.
And then later, a U2 song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
A very good one. Yes.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Actually, it's not the only song, but I'll get to that.
Oh, yes.
2 days later, Bernadette was denied the right to speak at the House of Commons about the situation. Instead, the Home Secretary spoke, and he claimed that the paratroopers fired in self-defense. Mm. Bernadette's response was to scream, "Murderous hypocrite," hurl herself at him, and slap him across the face.
Mm. Oh, she slapped him, too?
She slapped
him. She probably would have thrown a rock if she would have had one.
Right? And it was that situation that later became the title song for Chumbawamba's album Slap.
Really? Nice. Yeah. Oh, the I get knocked down but I get up again.
Yes, they have a song called Slap, which was the name of their album that was about her slapping in the House of Commons.
Cute.
I know. So she was interviewed after that about the slap. The reporter asked her if she felt like she had been unladylike.
Mm.
She answered the question, "The woman who was shot in the back yesterday, was she being unladylike?"
That's a fair point.
And then it's interesting, too, because in 2010, they did a comprehensive investigation of Bloody Sunday, and they did find the army responsible.
Oh.
And the government offered an apology.
Oh, okay.
But no soldiers have been prosecuted, and the victims' families are still demanding justice. So.
Ooh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, tough one.
Right. In 1973, she had previously, during all of this time, had her first child.
Oh my gosh, during all of this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And a year later, she married their father, her daughter's father, a school teacher, Michael Michalski. They went on to have two more children. She, again, tried to hold on to her seat in parliament. However, she failed.
Gotcha. It sounds like she had it for a while.
Maybe 5-ish years.
Okay.
Four
right.
or five.
Gotcha.
And after that, she was never reelected. Yeah. But I think she also saw that not much progress was going to be made in parliament. She ended up in the late 70s moving to live in seclusion with her family. She was guarded by British security forces. However, in 1981, a group of three Ulster freedom fighters seeking revenge for her support of the H-Block prison campaign took a sledgehammer to her front door.
Oh.
Mm.
They shot Bernadette 9 times as she rushed to protect her children, and her husband Michael was shot twice, leaving him permanently disabled.
Oh my God.
The shooters left through the back door, where they were arrested by the paratroopers that were guarding her door, they got in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And were arrested when they left.
Oh, that seems suspect.
That's what she said.
No.
Her injuries were life-threatening, but she was able to get to the hospital, and she did survive.
She survived being shot 9 times?
She survived being shot
she
9
got back,
times.
Wow. She got knocked down.
But
she got up again.
That song's
never
not about her,
her
but
down.
I see what you're doing
Maybe
there.
Maybe it should be. Wow.
Yeah. So she's always continued her activism, though. Now through community outreach programs, mainly for the marginalized.
Gotcha.
A quote from her in 2016 when she was 69 years old, she said, "I care passionately about justice, about ideas, about principles. I love this work I do now, working with people on the margins. Living on the margins is where I get least bored. My only interest in rules is to see how far they can be pushed. I'm always interested in the boundary beyond which we're told things won't work. Is in where the tension is that requires change to make those things work out there."
Nice. So, I like that.
Yes.
As a fellow rule breaker myself, I get it.
Right. And she is still alive. I saw a 2003 article about her introducing more of her history for an online Irish magazine. Or newspaper, an online newspaper, and announcing that she was going to start writing a socialist column for them.
Oh, nice. I just like the idea that, you know, that still writing, you know, still thinking about writing. So
She is. You Maybe can find lots of nice interviews right. with her online where she keeps up these convictions she's had since her early 20s that she's still fighting for. But she is doing that through through written word and through nice. Community outreach and work. So.
Yeah.
Yes, I thought she was quite incredible.
Look at that. Still making history then.
Absolutely.
And still being rebellious within it as well.
Right. You know, she did so many incredible things, but when I selected her as my person, it was that being shot like 9 times
that's and then like, going on. I'm like, this. Yeah.
Revolutionary shot 9 times and comes back and is now a grandma.
Exactly. Look at that.
Pretty incredible.
Still fighting for a better tomorrow.
Right. I mean, her recent stuff is really eye-opening. She actually talks about how the quality of life in Derry has gone down from when she was a youth.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And it didn't sound like it was that great when she was a youth necessarily
but
either.
But there were programs where she could go to university, even though she was on welfare, get her education, and she said those just don't exist anymore.
The support systems
have been eroded, so.
Ew.
Still lots of work to do.
Yes, exactly.
But so. I watched on YouTube a 20-minute video that was made in the 70s by 60 Minutes about her, and it showed a lot of footage from the Battle of the Bog.
Oh, okay.
Where you can see her in that leadership role and taking phone calls and negotiations, and you can see the violence of it.
So right, yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
Nice. Fantastic.
Are you guys ready for me to wrap us up?
I think so. That was amazing. Well, I feel like I want to dig in even more, but I've got a, you know, a firm sense of, well, that's a badass.
Right? Total badass. Well, that wraps it up for us this week. Join us next week as another Irish gal is picked to share as Gal's Guide podcast continues. Thanks for listening.
Want to learn about more women of history? Gal's Guide opened a unique women's history lending library. Come visit and explore our collection. Learn more at galsguide.org. Thanks for listening.